Blog Talk Radio.
Back again, once again, for a wonderful Thursday. I'm your host, Marlon Ranger, and of course, I got my man, Lumatic. What's going on, sir?
Yeah, not much, not much.
Not much? You ain't popping bottles yet, right? Because your prediction is looking really tasty right about now, right? You guys sitting there. You told me, and I didn't believe it. You said, hey, they're going to take it in six games. Golden State's going to win game one, and after that, LeBron and the rest will win the next four out of five games. This is what you told me. You said it. It's on record, Lou. So I can't even debate. I can't fight you. I can't disagree with you because it's starting to bear itself out in prophecy. You must have a third eye over there. But I tell you what, I got my own theory on what's happening right here, and this is what I kind of suspect is going to happen. But before I get into what I think is going to happen, why don't you go ahead and lay it down for the people, because I'm going to bow down and give you clearance because you have been 100% correct on. I got to do it. Right is right. Not right is right. I said Golden State in seven. It's not that it's impossible to happen, but it's just what I'm seeing with my eyes is starting to bear out to say that that's not going to happen. So I'm going to go ahead and defer to you. Let's let you go ahead and tear it off on what you see and what are the things that you're noticing and what are the things Cleveland's doing that Golden State's not necessarily doing. So go ahead, lay it on us, man.
Well, Cleveland is doing exactly the same thing that Memphis was doing to Golden State. The only difference is that Cleveland, as I said before, they have outside shooters. And on top of that, they're playing defense. They're playing way better defense than Golden State is playing. Way better defense. Everybody on the team is hustling. And, once again, offensive rebounding. Offensive rebounding for a team that has a bigger front line than what Golden State has. And, again, it proves, again, offensive rebounds 41 to 35. You know, in defensive 55 to 45. Less turnovers. I mean, intangibles is what win. Intangibles is what win playoffs. Intangibles is what win the finals. When has that never been a thing? All the championship teams, they have players. If not just one, a bunch of players that do all the little things that matters. You know, go back to Dennis Rodman, Kurt Rambis, Vernon Maxwell, James Posey, Robert Horry, all these players and a lot more do the intangible things that win games. You're not going to win just based off of offense. Defense wins games.
I agree with you, my man. And it's typical of what we've always seen before in the past, where the role players are really showing how important and how necessary they are to every team, each and every team. Everybody likes to go ahead and like make their little quick assumptions on those Bulls team. Really, there's only really one Hall of Famer on there, and that's Pippen. Everybody else is, a really pretty good, solid role player, right? The Kerrs, the Paxsons, the Craig Hodges, Cartwrights. You go to the Horace Grant, right? Rodman was the only other Hall of Famer that I would see on that team, but he was at the tail end of his career later on, correct? So you really look at it, even from those Rockets teams, it was kind of loaded, but it was really Elijah Wan and possibly – who else on that? The Drexler? Elijah Wan and Drexler are the Hall of Famers. Everybody else was like really good role players between Vernon Maxwell coming off the bench, being solid, Kenny Smith. We watch, and Otis Thorpe and those guys, we watch as this plays out that you have one great superstar, and I got to give him his props. You know, I don't consider myself to be a harsh LeBron critic because I'm not. I'm basically what I would like to say a realist. Right? There's no need in just you know, engaging in any kind of hyperbole to say this guy's just magnificent or he's just unfathomable or he can't be, you know, contested. And that's not usually the position I take when talking about LeBron. Although he does meet the criteria for one of the best players or greatest players that will play, he'll be up there at the end of his career. What he's doing, I got to say, is more impressive than I've seen from any superstar that has made it to that level. I think the only person that kind of took over a team like this and that kind of really – no, really, I can't recall any, to be quite honest. I can't. I was going to say go real deep back to that 82 Philadelphia 76ers, but you had Moses Malone, right? You had Dr. J. So, you know, you had a couple of Hall of Famers. I think you had one more Hall of Famer on there. So I can't say them. Can't say the Celtics. Can't say the Lakers. Can't say Detroit. I mean, you had two basically Hall of Famers in the backcourt. And one can make an argument that, hey, maybe Laimbeer gets in there just on defense alone, right? Or the physicalities, we don't know. Maybe the Pacers. No, you still got Mark Jackson, and you still got Reggie Miller, right? So it's like I've never seen one person actually take over and really just win a series of this magnitude after they were considered to be the underdog. Let's face it. Man, you was talking early on. I was like, you know, I don't see how they can pull this out without Kevin Love. And this is before Kyrie even gets hurt. I said, you know, even if Kyrie gives you about a good 70% of health, they're still going to, you know, make it good. But I'm going to predict that Golden State is going to win. But, I mean, he goes down, and it's like, man, what's going on here? And like you say, there's a lack of hustle on Golden State's part from what I see. They haven't got onto a clean start in the whole series yet. They always come on late in the fourth quarter, right? Just this last game. Yep. We saw, you know, Steph Curry basically get warmed up towards the fourth quarter. That's when he was starting to light things up. He scored, what, 17 points in the fourth quarter? So from visibly when we look at it from the offset, we would have to go ahead and say that if they don't turn the switch on early, they're going to lose this series. This is a pivotal game for them. They have to win this one. There is no leeway on this game. They must win. They have to treat it just like they did when they faced off against Memphis, which was the last team that was down 2-1. They're going to have to look at this team and take it serious. They're going to have to come out in, like, desperation just like Cleveland's coming, because that's basically what's been happening. And, you know, I suspect tonight, if I had to make a prediction tonight, I'm saying Golden State's going to win because, hey, I picked them in 7 games, but nevertheless, I'm not picking them just because of the 7 games. It's just that the way that game ended yesterday, or not yesterday, but the day before yesterday, I saw that's the team that's scary. That's the team that could beat anybody. That team that was playing in the fourth quarter. They were down 20 points. They came back, marginalized the rest of the game, and it just was a little bit too little too late, right? But I suspect and expect them to make this matchup, you know, a full game. I expect Draymond Green to look better. I expect Harrison Barnes to look better. I expect this game to be close like all the rest, but I suspect that Golden State will win this game, and they'll go back to Golden State. And just like I said, I think this game or this series will go to 7 games. Now, if they lose, it's done. It's done. It's done in 6, just like you predicted, without any kind of feedback or kickback. I'm not going to fight you on it, Lou. That's what's going to happen. But people will sit here and they'll tell lies. Everybody knows. Nobody suspected this to happen. Not with the injuries to Love and the injuries to Kyrie Irving. Nobody saw that happening. You know, if I tell you at the beginning of the season that those two teams make it to the finals, and then what ends up happening is that Kyrie and Love are out, and they got to face this Golden State team, everybody would pick Golden State probably in a sweep, right? At the most, you could say they can only win 5 games because you're thinking LeBron can't do it all by himself. Not all of it, but you look at Dellavedova, and the impact that he's having on that team. This guy's like a hustle-matic machine. And I heard that he has a little bit of injury issues. I know he was having troubles breathing. What to say? No, they had to get him a respirator or some situation?
No, just dehydration. That was it.
Okay, so you give him a bottle of Gatorade and some water, and he's good to go, right? That's basically what we're saying. Some electrolytes. Hit him some electrolytes so he can perform and be better. So, you know, okay, so J.R. Smith really hasn't had that great of a series. I mean, he's averaging 10.7, but, you know, he's really choked, to be quite honest, in my eyes. And you look at Tristan Davis, or Tristan Thompson, is it? He's been immaculate on the boards. So, I mean, I did see a Sean Marion sighting last game for the first time. And
yeah,
I don't know. They didn't,
no hold your breath.
Well, you know, I can't say anything against them if they're winning. You know what I'm saying? But we know, you and I both know, that is, he needs to be at least somewhere around 20 minutes or 25 minutes. I was starting, to be quite honest. I would with, well, no, because maybe I would go ahead and go with JR and Amon Shumpert to be right along there with Dellavedova and LeBron James. If they went small or whether they went big. But there's no threat to the inside for the Golden State Warriors. They got to figure out something. Because, listen, Bogut's not giving them anything. The other center's not giving them anything. They need to figure out something. You got to close it up. You got to force them to your left. You want LeBron shooting jump shots, right? Particularly to his left side. That's his weakness. Everybody knows that. If there's any weakness in LeBron's game, that's where it's at, right? Push him to the left. Get him to shoot the jump shot. We look at his shooting percentage, it hasn't been that great. But what it is that he's been able to distribute the ball so well that, you know, if he doesn't bring you somebody else well, and there we go, 2-1 Cleveland, right? So he's running with everybody, emotions on his back. I expect this game here to really be somewhat tight, but I'm going to State tonight. I think they're going to pull this one off. That's my you know, intuition or yeah, they're gonna have to. It's really not a choice at this particular moment. They're gonna have to figure out a way to come away with this victory. If they don't, they're gonna lose. This series is over. They're not coming back. There's not been anybody in NBA history in the finals to come back from a 3-1 series. That's crazy. Not gonna happen. So, you know, that's logically what I see from my standpoint. I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to go ahead and add on the top and as a cherry to figure this thing out? Because to me, it's quite simple. You know, you can't start off cold. You got to force them jump shots. You can't let them get inside. Or if you're going to foul them, don't foul them and let them get the shot off. Hold them. And that's another thing they've been getting very lucky about. Because I tell you, J.R. Smith has almost ruined a couple of those games with some stupid fouls, right?
Yeah.
I know he's almost gotten to the point of where they might just release him for some of the ridiculous mistakes he's allowed to happen in the final minutes of the game. So I don't know. So what do you got to add there, Lou?
Yeah, well, they need to figure something out right off the bat. They have to get a better offensive plan going against Cleveland, because they can't just leave Steph Curry to just try to keep trying to shoot over Shumpert and, you know, Dellavedova when they're all over them. They have to run some screens to get them some open shots right from the start. You can't just wait for towards the end of the game and then, okay, now he's starting to feel the shot. They have to get it going right now. And we need to find Harrison Barnes. He was missing the last game. I don't even think he played. Need to find that guy. Where is he?
Can we put an APB out on him? Do we need the missing milk carton? Because I don't know where he's at. This guy hasn't been seen since the last series. That's the last time we saw him actually produce and look, you know, really good. He played well against the Rockets, right? He did. I got to give him his props. He looked spry. He came in there putting up some wonderful shots. Had great shots. Great shot selection. I haven't seen him. He's been pretty much invisible this whole series. He's disappeared. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, that's basically it. And also, yeah, they're playing David Lee now, but David Lee, he's good offensively. He's always been a good offensive player, but not so good on defense. And you already know when you have him in the game. Cleveland already knows what they're going to do when David Lee is on the court with them. So they already have that figured out. And like I said before, when you have David Lee in there playing the center position, you know, Mozgov is going to do whatever he wants when they run that give and go play, dunk all over Andrew Bogut. He's going to do the same thing to David Lee. They can't really cover the middle.
You know what? Let me tell you something. Like, Lee has really been almost non-existent this whole playoffs. When you were looking, I haven't seen him play that much in the playoffs yet. You know, early on in the season, midway through the season, this guy was somewhat of a force, right? He was giving you 14 to 12 points a game with 10 rebounds. And, you know, he has a wide body, he's thick. He can get into the paint. He can create shots for himself as a big man. Why don't you have both him and Bogut in the game? Two big bodies?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Lee, towards like the end of the season, he was out with injuries, but he was okay for the playoffs for the most part. But you know, Kerr never really played him. He played the other guy on Spites, but
yeah.
Lee barely played that much in the playoffs.
Is Spites the one that missed that dunk?
Yeah,
he's the one that missed that dunk, ain't he?
Yeah,
and he's what, like 7 foot even.
He didn't play in this game.
I imagine it would be done for him. He'd be done series. For me, he'd be on that bench with a suit on after missing that shot. I mean, listen, Lou, the goal is only 10 feet tall, right? He himself stands about 7 foot. He puts his hands up. He's literally touching the rim. And I mean, for him to – that was a turning point. That basically – ruined that game for them, and went into overtime. They couldn't do it. Pretty much game over, went backwards for them from that standpoint on. So, I mean, it's just, you have to, and I think Curry, listen, I hear Curry's getting a lot of criticism, and, you know, people say, you know, hey, you know, Mark Jackson could have did this and that. Let's come on. Okay, Jackson's great coach. Curry's doing a great job. Give the man his credit. He got him to what? One of the best. That's the best record a Golden State team has ever had in the history of their existence, right? And they've gotten to the final for the first time since before we was even born. That finally went in the what? The mid 70s? Weren't even thought of back then. No, our parents was out there playing hooky, right? Hooky and shooting pool before the last time they won.
Yeah.
Like, come on, man. Keep things in perspective. The guy's a great coach. Mark Jackson is also a great coach. It's just LeBron. LeBron is just really showing why he's the best player in the league, and that's what he's doing. You see this, JR? Are you watching the pregame right now? You paying attention to JR Smith? You see this, Lou? You see this,
no,
right?
I don't see it.
Yeah, it's a good thing you don't. See, that's why I'm going to pick against him. And I'm glad that he did. And look, Ric Flair's in the audience. You know? Well, you know, on other news, tangent to this, I don't know if you heard this, you know, but, you know, Dusty Rhodes ended up passing away today at the age of 69. I didn't even know I thought he was older than that. Didn't you? I thought he was well.
Yeah,
he was
I thought
70.
So, too.
But that goes to show you, and, you know, that's kind of tough on, remember his son wrestled too, Dustin Rhodes. Or Gold Dust, right? So
yeah, both of his sons, Dustin and Cody.
Oh, that's right. Two of them. So I know it's got to be a hard day for him. You know, we used to love watching wrestling at that age, and Dustin Rhodes was a fun guy to watch, very entertaining. And you know, it's funny. You know, you see Ric Flair over there. Let me tell you, nobody talks noise like Ric Flair, right? You still ain't seen this on ESPN, man? You see him, don't you?
Hold on.
Why I say it's like he's like rolling one of those scooters. the ones that don't have like a handle.
Oh.
See, so what happens if he has an ischial corner and rolls that ankle? You see, why put yourself in a situation like that? He's always doing something. He's already almost messed up the series with those fouls late in games, and then it just shows his level of maturity, man. It's like I don't think he's ever serious. But look, it's paying off because of the guy that is serious, and that's why they're up 2-1 because of the guy that is serious. And we'll see how things look out. But, you know, LeBron has been somewhat spectacular in this series. He's almost averaging a triple-double. You know, he's averaging over 40 points a game. I think that's what it is, 40 points. And it's a 41 points. And, like, 8.3 assists, like 10 rebounds or 11 rebounds, something ridiculous. That's high efficiency, and everybody wants to look at his shot selection. Well, who is he going to pass it to? You ever notice? This is the general rule of understanding people who don't really have much sense if they don't understand. See, if you don't have anybody to pass the ball to, you're going to hang on to the ball. You're going to hesitate. And this is where the turnovers come into play because you're not sound with where you want to put the ball at. So you make a lot of hesitation plays. Then that's when you tend to get ripped. You might dribble too long. See, you might take an unnecessary shot that might not be clean because you don't have confidence in the person that you want to pass the ball to, right? Makes sense. Yep. If when you look at LeBron, when he has high percentages, you look at what he did in Miami, that was the highest efficiency that he's ever had in his career. Why? Because you have Dwayne Wade and you have Chris Bosh and you have Mike Miller, you have Ray Allen. See, you have sharpshooters and people that are veterans, you know, they're going to be Hall of Famers later on in life. So when you pass the ball out to them or keep the ball out to them, you're sound with the judgment. It makes sense. You don't have to worry whether they're going to make a shot or make a stupid move, right? So that gives you the freedom to pass the ball where you want to pass it. You don't have to take the extra dribble, and then you just square up and take the high percentage shot. And that's why his numbers were up when he was in Miami. But now he comes in Cleveland. Listen, it's a bunch of role players. None of those guys made an all-star game. None of them, right? Dellavedova would be the only one that we would say would be on the verge of making an all-star game, correct? So you look at this situation with rose-colored glasses, you have to be true to yourself and look like this is what causes him to take so many difficult shots because he really does not trust anybody else to take the shot. And a lot of the times they don't want to take the shot. Right, because they've never been in that position where they had to show up and score points. That's Kyrie Irving. That's Kevin Love. When those two are healthy, good Lord, it's like his efficiency shoots through the roof. So, you know, all the experts and how they're saying this, that, and a lot of the media players, I don't see how they don't see this. To me, it's quite obvious. He's better when he has better talent around him, less question, less mistakes. Gets the ball in, takes the high percentage shot, better shooting percentage, and then it looks pretty on paper, right? But nevertheless, they're up 2-1. He could take up, he can shoot 38% or 37%. It doesn't matter. They're winning, and he has to take those shots because he's the go-to guy. So that bodes well, in my opinion, for Golden State because really Steph Curry is the one that's been struggling. Like from the three-point lane, one of those guys close to 50% in the regular season, right? Him and Klay Thompson in the backfield, when they're together, they've been averaging close to 50% from the three-point line. And now in this series, I think they're down to like 37%, 36%. They cannot win. They cannot struggle like that. And, you know, Curry, I expect him to do a little bit of something. I expect Thompson to do a little bit of something. I think those two combined, if they give you close to 50 to 60 points, they're going to win that game. And if you get anything out of Draymond Green, if you get anything out of Harrison Barnes or even Bogut, and I'm sure Iguodala, what kills him is free throws. He's got to be able to make free throws, man. I mean, he's pretty much a shooting guard, right? You wouldn't call him a small forward, would you? Well, I guess he would by height, right? But he's more or less a shooting guard well. More so than a small forward.
He's usually a good free throw shooter. He just this year he's been struggling for whatever reason. But.
Yeah, big time. before, what Iguodala was, what, like a 70, 75, 77% free throw shooter? And now he comes into this playoffs and he's like, it's like something ridiculous. He's looking like your boy out of the Clippers there, DeAndre Jordan. He's playing like 47, 37%. Lou, I'm going to tell you, if there's anything that kills me more than anything else, it's the fundamentals. You can't get the fundamentals down. Listen, we can go out on the court right now. I haven't played, touched the basketball since, I don't know, Dave and Buster's probably. And I'm telling you, give me a good solid. I'm telling you the truth. Give me a good solid 2 hours, okay? Straight, 2 hours straight. And I'm telling you, I'm busting 80%. I'm telling you. That's a – and you can't – listen, that's a free throw. That's an uncontested shot sitting at the top of the key. That's what, about 15 feet from the basket? Straight ahead?
Yeah.
Listen, right now, 2 hours straight on that basketball court, I'm making 80% of my free throw shots. I am, because it's rhythm, right? And what it is really is practice. I used to watch – Lou, we used to watch these games – back when we was in school, we never saw anything like this. Nobody had terrible free throw shooting like that except for, ooh, Shaq. Even, I mean, Olajuwon was hitting at 70, 75, 80%, right? He's a center. Tim Duncan was at 70, 70-something percent. David Robinson, same thing. You could just rattle off the names of the big men back in those days. Even Shaq was hitting you with 60-something percent. And at first, it was like, okay, well, maybe the big men are the ones struggling with this. No, it's starting to trickle down to everybody else. I mean, you got no business being a small forward shooting 40% from the free throw line. That's ridiculous. That's just, it's almost, man, it's so sacrilegious. I don't even know how to even, assess that. How do you miss a free throw shot? That's the easiest shot. It's the only uncontested shot in the whole game. All you have to contend with are the people behind the backboard, right, making the little wavy things. And you're not even paying attention to that. They're way over there. You're looking at the basket. I tell you what, them booing me actually would probably help me out, cause me to focus more. I'll probably shoot better free throw percentage on the road than I would at home. No, I'll probably be 80% either way. Probably more than that, 85%, 80%. Hey, Lou, in my line, listen, we were so good at shooting free throws when we was playing ball, we had to shoot them from the three-point line because it was too easy. The game wouldn't even last longer. What, with three straight free throws, then you got to take the ball out, right? Every time, we had to move it back to the three-point line because we was making them. We was making too many free throws, and the game would be over quicker. So that's how, and people, and I'm sure this is pretty much the same kind of, situation with anybody playing street ball or playing indoor ball. But listen, what about a good 85% free throw? I could vouch for that and say that with confidence. During our heyday or prime, some weeks we might even be 90%.
I played. I played organized ball. I played in some like city leagues, and I'm at 90%.
It's the easiest shot, is it not? That's the easiest shot, man. You got to make that. I mean, you just got to. It's ridiculous if you don't. Yeah, I don't know what to even say. That just really just burns my bacon.
But for Golden State situation, it's not going to matter if you can't get the ball. You can't get the ball past the three-point line to get in the lane to get the foul call to shoot free throws. Because they barely shot any.
Yeah, but see, and that's how the refs do. They try Cleveland early on, and now they got the home field advantage. It's like the consistency of the refs, and I must say this, Lou, it's just been consistent with what we've been accustomed to anyway. They never were really good anyway. No, the officials suck.
They're the worst.
How does it always switches for the home team? When they get to the home, it's like they just make that and say, okay, we're not going to really call anything on the home team. When Cleveland was facing off against Golden State and Golden State, it was some terrible calls. Even a few that LeBron should have got that he didn't get. Well, you can assess that way. I based on what we've seen, I expect tonight to be a slight difference, and I'm picking Golden State. I think Golden State is going to come up, and they're going to win this game. It's going to be a close game, like all the rest of them, but I expect them to win. So, that's what I pretty much see. Guess now, just want to head to the NFL real quick. There's a couple of things going on. I had to say, seems like the Patriots signed quarterback Matt Flynn to a short-term deal. Why they did that, Lou, I don't know why they did it. Why do you think they did that? Does it make sense? Is that really giving a sign to – are they sending a message to Tom Brady?
What are they doing? They could be. They could be. It's almost around that time, isn't it?
Let me tell you what's going to happen with them. Let me tell you what's going to happen with them. Because, see, when it comes to Coach Belichick, when it comes to Belichick, when it comes to the GM, and actually Belichick is the GM, right? He's going to get too cocky. Watch what I tell you. He's going to mess around and get rid of Tom Brady somewhere along the line. I'm saying maybe 2 years from now, might not want to pay him a certain amount of money. Right? We'll say, well, this is a Patriot Way's business, and then it's going to fall apart. Because let me tell you something. No Tom Brady equals none of those rings. Everybody thinks that it's just Belichick. And Belichick does a good job of game planning and putting less talent around. The only reason why less talent around works is because Tom Brady makes the talent work, right? If you don't have Tom Brady, you don't have a shot. Now they went 11-5 when they last didn't have Tom Brady for a full season when he injured his knee, right against I believe it was the Kansas City Chiefs, first game of the season, injured his knee, had an ACL, faced off that season. The Patriots went 11-5. They didn't tell you they didn't make the playoffs, right? Also didn't say the Dolphins won a division. You see that? You ever look at Tom Brady's record when he plays a full season? This guy's 12 or better every year. It's the truth, is it not? You look at Tom Brady's resume, and you look from top to bottom over the course past 5 to 6, 7 seasons, and look at Tom Brady's record in a regular season every year. He doesn't do anything worse than 12 victories. Nothing less. The guy has 4 Super Bowl rings. And I tell you what, you take those giant games, you take David Tyree's little hope and guess catch, and also Mario Manningham's catch down the stream, which was a wonderful pass by Eli Manning. You take those away, guess what? And wait a minute, Welker catches the ball. I forgot about that. He doesn't drop the ball. He catches it. We're talking about Tom Brady having 6 championships with no losses. That's what we're talking about here. That's how close it was. He took a team 18-0 with Randy Moss. Only time they had a super all-star wide receiver, somebody with magnificent talent, took that team 18-1, really could have beat the Giants, didn't win, but listen, they was in it. And then you turn around and play the Giants back in 2011 again. Gronk is injured, right, Kent? He went out partying. Right after that, Welker misses that catch right along the seam, right on the outside corner, just drops the ball. Listen, Tom Brady could have 6 championships right now as we speak. He could have 6 of them. Don't tell me that's Belichick. That's Tom Brady. And you mess around and you screw that over. I'm telling you, forget about it. We've already seen the glory days, and it'll be a wrap. And we know this year also, as well as Peyton Manning's going to be his last season. And I saw him because today was basically the last day for mandatory team workouts, team trainings, right? Today was the last mandatory day. Now it's going to be mini camp after that, or preseason after before. So a lot of guys are going to be training. And, you know, I already saw what the Patriots have done with that the guy that made the big play. That free safety, I forgot his name, it was Butler.
Yeah.
Made the big play. I guess he got into some kind of situation where he missed something, and basically Belichick just put him on the bench.
He missed his connecting flight because there was bad weather, and missed his connecting flight going to Massachusetts. Which, in that situation, I don't really agree with, because that's something that's out of his hand. It's not his fault. That's the airport situation.
Yeah, that's nature. Now, something is telling me there's something else there. But you know what this also tells me? You realize those were not the mandatory workouts. You realize that, right?
Yeah.
This is, and see, this is why, you know, somewhat to a certain degree, why I have a real big issue with upper management. Because, see, you have mandatory workouts, and then you have these workouts, team workouts, that are not necessarily mandatory, but in reality, they actually are, aren't they? You know,
yeah.
Look at what happened with Adrian Peterson when he went with Minnesota, and he had the same situation. He didn't show up for a couple of those workouts. Guess what? They weren't mandatory. But now it's news, and everybody's talking about it, right? And everybody's worrying, and will he come back, and is he going to try to go to Dallas? Is he going to try to go to Arizona? This is what we're hearing, but the workouts were not mandatory. So we know that word basically is just ridiculous. We know that all the workouts are primarily mandatory. I would say we'll just say that, right? Don't say these are just regular workouts, or don't say these are unmandatory or non-mandatory workouts, because you're lying. Because they are. This guy missed a flight due to nature, and now he has to be sit out. He might be in danger of getting cut. And he was the guy that made the big play in the Super Bowl to seal the victory. Am I wrong, Luke?
Yep. Yeah, you're right.
Yes. See, this is how they do you. And the NFL is good for it. They don't want to give you the guaranteed contract. They don't want to give you, you know, the benefit of the doubt. They want to call, they want to have these under the table type agreements, and then knowing that they're actually mandatory, and they lie to people. And we sit here and we watch, and it's like, okay, so now you want to hold the players to this standard, but what are you doing over here? You don't want to give more money. You don't want to, you know, hold on to a guy. There's an issue. You see what I'm saying? It's always a problem, and that's how they do, you know. But on the second hand, listen. Players, you got an issue with it, guess what? That's what your union, when you have these meetings, right, you need to be willing to say that I'm not going to play football if I don't get the right deal. And I don't like Roger Goodell running all the league, and I don't like these teams not giving us guaranteed money. You make it that way, but see, with the injuries in football, that's what happens. That's why you're not going to get a lot of the guaranteed contracts, because of the potential to get injured. If a player's not playing, what happens, Lou? Why are we wasting money on him? He locks up the whole salary cap. Well, first off, you make the most money out of any league in the nation. They make the most money. They make more than the NBA and all this. NBA just made this big deal, and that's what they're having $180 million salary cap? Something crazy?
Mm-hmm.
That's like, Lou, that's crazy, ain't it? And all that money's guaranteed. And you look at baseball, there is no salary cap. That's why the Yankees can just buy whoever they want. And truth be told, if there was salary caps, you know it would happen. You'd have dominant teams, and then now GMs would have to earn their money. Even though GMs still have to earn their money, because even when they get a good player, you can't maintain them for more than 3 or 4 years. After that, major contract is up, because you see how the NFL does, right, Lou? You sign a 5-year deal, and the third year, the end of the third deal, the player's trying to get a new deal. Right, and if you don't make that contract, then he holds out, and guess what? Now you got a problem on your hand, team chemistry. Nobody likes each other, right? I hate them, they hate me. Falls apart. So, you know, that's been something we've been seeing, but, you know, that's pretty sad for the guy, because, you know, it was nature, man. Come on. And he made it. He just was late. I mean, I don't know if he ended up, taking a bus, or he traveled some other alternate way to get there. He just was late. Maybe there's more to it. Could be that too. Could be more to the situation that's not actually coming out, because we know how the Patriots are, right? They're like the CIA times 10. I keep any secret better than any other government agency. You never know what's going on. I mean, all we know for now is that balls were being deflated. And you know what? What happened to the – oh, yeah, I forgot. That's supposed to be later on this month, right, when Tom Brady brings his appeal. So,
yeah,
we'll see how that goes necessarily.
Hey, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Why is Hope Solo allowed to play soccer?
Oh, she didn't get suspended for the domestic violence situation, right? Well, let me tell you
no.
what. This is very simple here, Lou.
Why did U.S. soccer thought that was okay?
Oh, what she did?
Yeah, she played. They had a game, I think, like earlier this week, and she played.
Uh-huh. Right. Well, let me go ahead and just tell you what it is, Lou. It's very simple. It's not very hard. See, being assy, because it has many connotations on it, right? Okay, you got a man being abusive, and you got a woman. Reality is men are twice the size as women, right? They're stronger, bigger, faster, okay, and they're more aggressive. So when you have a situation where the big guy picks on the little guy, everybody's going to root for the little guy, right? Fair enough. That's basically just from a physical standpoint. Now, when you look at it from a societal standpoint, you know, and I saw this, somebody did like this kind of test, this experiment. And what they did, they had a situation where the guy was being the abuser in a situation. You know, he was grabbing his girlfriend, he was yanking her face, he was mushing her, whatever the case. Before you knew it, you had about two or three people come up, and then everybody was either willing to kill this guy or call the police, right? Fair enough, and that's fair. Now, when the roles were reversed, guess what happened? People was going by, and they was laughing at the guy.
Yep.
And they were making smart comments, like, man, you know, he can't handle this girl. That's too bad. And they was actually cheering the fact that he was getting abused by the woman. See? So it's really a perception thing. It's a physical thing and a perception thing, and it's not going to be viewed the same. Because for the most part, if you had abuse, we're going to say 90% of the time the abuse is really going to come from the man. When it's physical abuse, we know this, they're going to be the ones that really commit the act. Now, not to say that the women don't get physical, but, I mean, let's be real about it. There's really not much damage they can do to us in the first place because they're not nearly as strong enough. And they're weaker, and they're not as, you know, they're not physically strong enough to intimidate us. Now, there is a lot of mental abuse that they do, right? A lot of name calling, degradation, degrading of your characteristics, basic, just hard, harsh criticism, along with some women get physical, slap their man, or maybe tear up his items, you know, put a hole in his clothes, tear his clothes up, put a hole in his car, tear up his items. You see what I'm saying? Those are the things they do. And really, it's going to fall on the responsibility of men calling the police. Now, just like anything else, to answer your question, yeah, Hope Solo was able to play even after she committed or was arrested for domestic violence on her partner and domestic violence and actually violence or assault against, I believe it was her mother or the guy's mother-in-law,
It was his sister-in-law, like half sister, and like a 16 or 17-year-old son.
Yeah, see, so she was just really just going ham all the way around. You know what? I also think too, Lou, it's the fact that this is women's soccer, and let's be realistic about it. I mean, we're not going to spend a Saturday afternoon watching that, right? That's not going to get a whole bunch of ratings. It's not going to be an NBA Finals game. It's not going to be a World Series. It's not going to be a Super Bowl. Nobody's going to pay much attention to that, right? So since it's in the background of viewership, right, it's not as famous or popular, it's almost like, okay, well, who cares? You feel what I'm saying? I think that's the consensus of what's going on here. It's not visible enough for us to even have a conversation about it. It's just that something she did. And, yeah, you know what? She should have been made an example that really nobody should abuse anybody, right? That's fair enough. You know, men, keep your hands to yourself. Women, keep your hands to yourself. Both should get punished for the most part on equal scale, but we know that's not going to happen. And that's really a societal situation, and that's more or less of what goes on with traditions, because primarily, that is something that men usually do. Men usually, and we're talking about those women back, as far as I can even remember, even in my father's and my grandfather's generation, that would actually abuse their women. And they would be the culprit a good 95% of the time. And very few times you would catch the woman being the one that would be the abuser to the man in a physical way. So I think society has that perception, and then that perception is what it is. But, ultimately, it has to be some kind of punishment, right? You got to be somewhat balanced. You just can't be
you would think that, but, the USA Soccer organization thought otherwise.
But listen, look at what soccer's doing. I mean, one guy just had to resign because he was crooked, right? Funneling money and laundering money, and nobody knows what's going on, right? Then it's not going to be any different. It's like I see it, and I get it, and I agree. She should have had to honor her suspension, but apparently she didn't, and it's not enough of a groundswell of people coming out saying that, hey, man, this is not right. I mean, it's not fair. Look at all the rest of everybody else. Ray Rice's career is basically, for the most part, seems to be finished, right? We don't think a team is going to pick him up at all. I think he's been blacklisted from the NFL from what he did. You look at Greg Hardy going through the same kind of situation. You got Ray McDonald out there in Chicago for the same situation. And then maybe race might play in it too. I mean, she's a white woman, right? Not only is she a woman, but then now she's a white woman. Could Serena Williams get away with that? Could Serena Williams be guilty of, domestic violence and still not face any kind of, suspension? You got to look at it like that too, right? I think if Hope Solo was a black woman, she probably would get punished. Be real, right? We're just using association or guilty by association.
It would be a light punishment. I mean, look what happened with Shamika Hoswell. Her punishment wasn't really a harsh punishment. Brittany Gardner, the same thing. She's going to play this year with her little domestic.
Yeah, that's like, did you see that story? Speaking of that, that was like, wow, man, because they had that situation right there. They turned around and, what was it, man? I think they got married, right? Then she said after they got married, what's the worst mistake of her life? And now I think they're getting a divorce. And then now what's the girl's name?
Got her name. I forgot her first name. I think it's Glory. I think Glory Johnson, something like that. She plays for
Glory
the Tulsa
Johnson.
Shot.
That's her name, Glory. She comes out. She goes, well, I was never really gay. I just, she's just different. Like, well, I'm like, man, it's all kinds of mess with that situation.
Yeah. And she's not playing this year because she's pregnant.
Wow. I mean, wait a minute. Before I even go there, let me just get the real facts on this situation here. Something that was planned between the two of them, or is that something like she got involved with somebody else and... So that's possibly what the fight was over, right?
That I don't know. I don't know as far as that goes.
You got to be careful out here. It's rough. You can't be out here trusting any and everything, man, because listen, it goes for the men too. There's a lot of these dudes that are like, they say they're just, you think they're just 100% gay. Listen, if you know, like I know, right, Lou, gay men have a lot of what? Female friends, right? We see it all the time. You look into a whole group, look at the gay guy has about four girlfriends with him. See? And you're thinking that there's not a chance or not the slightest that he's possibly having some kind of relations with one of those girls, right? Trust me, because we know how it is in life and in society. We see how people interact with each other. You think that once those girlfriend, one of them have a bad day, they're not going to somebody who they seem might be unassuming. And at the same time, guess what? He's still a man. You'll be surprised.
Yep.
And a lot of these dudes out here that, you know, that go, that'll be on the low or whatever the case may be, you got that too, right? Open.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be careful. Some of these women, you know, women, they go, they flip the switch sometimes. Sometimes they're not very decisive on situations. They have a whole bunch of ideas, and it can change from minute to minute. One day it could be cottage cheese, the next day it's yogurt, right? One day it's Taco Bell, the next day it's Burger King. It is very, it's very much so that way. They like variety. It take, it's nothing really too often where it's just something etched in stone. Changes always happen at the last possible minute, last moment. I could have been, you know, you could have been talking about a plan that you had for 30 days and 30 nights, right? You got 40 days to get it done. It gets up to day 39, and guess what? I think I want to change. That's what happens. And, yeah, and if you think they only do that with minor things, those things happen in relationships and the people they choose to be with. Very, very emotional. Be in their, you know, be in the moment. In the moment, they might feel this way. The person they're talking to, oh, you know, I thought I was gay. But, you know, I was talking to Tony over there and changed my mind. Talking to Big Rick over there, and, you know, Rick was saying all the right things, and he was understanding and identifying with my pain, and, you know, that's just what I thought. And see, before you know it, there it goes. So, yeah, that's definitely, you know, the Hope Solo thing, I think is a couple of things. One of those things, she's a female, and it's not looked at in the same vein as when a male commits some kind of domestic violence. The second thing, I believe, it's the soccer, basically, women's soccer at that. We're not even talking about males, but women's soccer. It's just not a big enough sport to draw enough attention to make somebody really care. And then I think, you know, races are part of that. I think that is. It's a small portion of that small percentage. I'd say maybe 5 to 2% of it, but it's there. Because trust me, I believe if it was Venus Williams or Serena Williams, if they were to go ahead and be caught out there with some kind of domestic violence, oh, they'd be suspended. They would drag that name through the mud. They would. They would, absolutely would. I believe so. Anyway, but that's kind of what I think. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, I think now I guess we come to the point to where we have to give a closing argument here. Where are we going to close it out here, Lou? What topic?
Let me see. Well, one little thing I just noticed here, the NBA, them and Nike, they announced a partnership, a marketing partnership today of eight-year global marketing and merchandising partnership.
Between NBA and Nike?
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's for all their apparel. And also on top of that, is that Adidas is no longer a part of the NBA as far as, like, apparel goes.
You know what? And let's just be realistic, okay? Nike's just the best sports apparel. Let's just stop and just admit that right now, okay? Let's be done with it and admit it. From the NFL to the NBA to the MLB, Nike makes the best sports products. Shoes, the jerseys, right? And every once in a while, you'll see Adidas. I don't think they're totally out. I think sometimes you'll see Adidas. They do some apparel, maybe the shoot-around shirts. They do some of the jerseys for the NFL. But they basically model themselves after the Nike model, right? Nike's the one that gives you all of the different versions of like, you look at Oregon. They're the first college or the first university to experiment with all the different kinds of jerseys, right? Then they just recently got the contract to do the NCAA college football jerseys, and then you start looking at these other teams. I mean, I'm looking at the Hurricanes, Florida State, Notre Dame, you know, any of these universities, Army, Navy, Duke. You ever see those uniforms? You see those jerseys? Man, they're ridiculous. They're so beautiful that it's ridiculous. They came in with the matte paint colored helmets. And like it just looked beautiful. And tell me, who makes a better running shoe or a basketball shoe better than Nike? So it's nobody. I mean, I've seen Under Armour, I've seen Skechers. They try to come with the bright colors like Nike, but it's like they don't look the same. I mean, they look good, but they're not the same. Maybe Saucony, maybe New Balance every once in a while they'll have one. Adidas, you know, some of the newer versions of Adidas look fairly decent, right? Some of the basketball shoes look okay. But, I mean, I looked at Derrick Rose's shoe and I looked at LeBron and Kevin Durant's shoe. It's like it's not even close. I'm looking at, you know, Rose's shoe. It's like, man, there's no way I'm buying that. That thing's hideous. Forget it. Why would I degrade myself that way? And then, you know, you look at some of the Air Maxes by Nike. Bro, the air bubble comes in different colors. They got the net. They got the mesh. The shoe feels comfortable. It's like you wear it with anything. Everybody respects it because it's what? It's Nike. Bro, you could take a poll, right, and put a pair of Nikes against some Tom Fords. I guarantee you we know who's going to sell the most. It's not worth that billions of dollars for nothing, right? It's nothing. It only makes sense to me for them to go ahead and see. Look, I'm looking at the NBA game, and I just looked at the shoot-around shirts and some of even the jerseys. Like Adidas made the Cleveland's, at least for what I saw. But you know, you take a Nike jersey, a Nike basketball jersey, versus an Adidas basketball jersey or a Reebok or NFL or any professional sport. Lou, let's be honest, we're going to go with the Nike. It's just, I don't know. They just know what it is to feel, be ahead of the game. They give you the nice different colors. They give you the variations. You know what I mean? So that doesn't surprise me. I think they're going to pretty much corner the market on that, and I think the other companies will get, you know, the smaller stuff and some of us, they'll have apparels because I don't think they'll allow Nike to totally monopolize, totally. You know what I mean? So they'll still have equipment, alternate equipment with Adidas or whether it be Reebok or whether it be, you know, Under Armour. I think they'll have their own apparel with NFL or NBA professional. You know what I mean? So, but I'm going Nike. And with that, man, I guess we can end it on that. Just do it, right? So, with that said, we'll go ahead and catch you guys back on Sunday. That should be either the last game for Golden State or maybe it's the rejuvenation or the rehabilitative game based on what we see tonight. But we'll go ahead and have that in conversation and the topic. Lou, you're the man, the myth, and you're a legend, my man, and I'll go ahead and shout it out. I'm your host, Marlon, or you call me the magician for those who want to get spicy or feisty. With that being said, I'm going ahead and let you go. We'll catch you Sunday. Peace.